Fancy listening to Irish Radio Network, USA. And, yeah, he's from Mayo, and he's, one more person from Mayo, except that my guest today is the rector of Knock Shrine in Knock County, Mayo. And I, again, get to welcome back to New York City Father Richard Gibbons. You're very welcome indeed.
Thank you very much indeed, Adrian. Thanks for having me back.
I'd say you're probably, Monsignor and half a dozen titles. Just want to ask you, though, about the rector title itself. Now, for those of us who went to boarding school in Ireland, the rector was indeed somebody who was sitting on high and had a great eye for looking at things, and that's it. There was a director of a college, the rector of a high school, and the disciplinarian. And then, of course, when we came to New York, we found, hey, even places like St. Patrick's Cathedral,
that's right,
there's a rector and so forth. But rector covers basically an overall boss. And
that's right. It covers the shrine part. So there's a dual dimension to the parish priest in Knock. He's the parish priest of the country parish. The ordinary parish that was there going way back. And because there's a shrine, the national shrine is attached to the parish now because of history and all, and the apparition and all of that, he has responsibility for the shrine per se. So it's kind of a dual role. So parish priest and rector, and that just means that you're in charge of the shrine.
Now, let me ask you, for the benefit of those who may not know about Knock, about the history of Knock, the story of Knock, and I will preface this by saying that unquestionably Knock Shrine in Ireland is the premier pilgrimage centre for the entire country, bar none. It is, and it has been, but how did Knock come on the map in the first place?
Okay, I'll keep this very short. Knock is important because of the apparition that occurred in 1879, the 21st of August 1879, a cold, wet, naturally, of course, Thursday evening, where at 8 o'clock in the evening approximately, witnesses, local people, saw an unusual sight at the gable end of the parish church. It turned out to be a very extensive apparition of Our Lady, St. Joseph, St. John the Evangelist, and at the heart and centre was an altar, a lamb and a cross, around which angels hovered, as was described by the 15 official witnesses at the time.
Yeah.
It lasted approximately 2 hours. Now, it's unusual because it happened at a parish church. It's unusual in terms of the history of apparitions itself because it wasn't just to, say, for example, a couple of children like in Fatima or one child like in Lourdes or, it was to an entire village. It was to anybody that wanted to look out their door of their cabin or their house, look out the window, anybody. So the whole village practically turned up to this. But there are 15 official witnesses of this. So it's unusual like that, ranging in age from about 6 to 70 years of age. And after that, Knock became extremely well known. Thousands of pilgrims came from all over the country. It got into the national press at the time. There was an official pilgrimage within a number of months from Limerick itself. And an investigation took place within months of the apparition. Another investigation took place in 1936 before the last witness died. And both commissions came out and declared that the testimony of the witnesses was trustworthy and satisfactory.
Right.
So as a result of that, the shrine began to grow little by little. Of course, the country went through the land war at the time in 1879. Another famine in the West at that time as well, the War of Independence, Civil War, all of that, the World War. It was a very difficult time, of course. After 1935, then, Knock Shrine Society was established by Dame Judy Coyne and her husband, Liam, and they simply decided that Knock needs to be better known than it is. and they decided to set up an organization to promote the shrine itself. And believe it or not, in 1935, going back to the minutes and to the records, they even at that time mooted or proposed an airport for Knock in 1935, which was highly unusual. So the shrine then became better known, and then it wasn't really until Monsignor James Horden took over the shrine in the late 60s when he became parish priest in 1967-68 that he decided to really place the facilities that were needed for pilgrims to come and to stay and to encounter their faith, encounter God. So he built the Basilica, he built various other amenities and facilities, and of course in the 1980s then he set about building the airport at Knock itself that was opened in 1985-86. So very simply, that is the story of Knock, based around an apparition, the most unique apparition in the entire world, in fact.
Right.
People ask me, look, do you believe that this actually happened? It's a very good question, because I asked it of myself as well. From a purely secular point of view, even, if you were to make up something like Knock, or like the apparition at Knock itself, you keep it simple. You don't complicate the matter. If you just wanted to speak about Our Lady, you just concentrate on that, and you don't do anything else. So that's why I think it's an unusual place.
Let me ask you, at least you'll be able, when you go home, you'll be able to tell them that our cell phones work in New York, even in the studios and whatever. The question, you know, that you have posed to yourself and that we posed to ourselves is, that was hardly simple, and to get, and God knows there were from clergy all the way to Rome, there was plenty of reason to investigate and to check and double check and whatever. And actually the church is quite slow in the promotion as it were.
Yeah, yeah.
But moving to what is very real and what has been very real is that the number of miracles that have happened at Knock, outright miracles beyond question. With a lot of people, Knock has always been affiliated and associated with healing. Mm. Healing of body and soul. Mm-hmm. And, you know, even those who may not perceive themselves as being staunch Catholics would still pick, say, Knock as a place for renewal. It's like an insurance policy, you know. You get to Knock at least once a year anyway, it can't do you any harm, and more than likely, it might even, you know, kickstart the whole notion of where you'd like to be in the first place. Let me ask you about what is indeed extremely well known is that Ireland, the Church in Ireland, which was considered to be not only strong but very influential, did an awful lot of good and is still doing a lot of good, but it came under a tremendous attack. Many would say for good reason, others would say more harshly because it was Ireland and it was the island of saints and scholars and whatever. But did, during that period of time, did that affect Knock in the sense that was it reflected, for instance, in the number of pilgrims? Because we're talking about, and Father Gibbons, you can tell us, 1.6 million.
That's right.
And that didn't start there yesterday.
No, absolutely not. In fact, it's an interesting point to link it to that, that even throughout the whole abuse scandal and all of that, the numbers maintained themselves, which was most unusual, that you'd think that there would be an automatic fall-off, but there wasn't. It was maintained. I'm in not 10 years.
Uh-huh.
Nine as a curate, as an associate, as they say here, and just the last year and a half or so as parish priest and rector. And that particular length of time, I have not seen a fall-off. In fact, in the last year, we've had extraordinary numbers. For a whole host of different reasons.
Right.
It ranges from the gathering to good weather to a whole host of different things. However, it never really affected the numbers for a particular reason. And I think that gave hope to an awful lot of people because they felt, well, in Knock you're kind of safe. You're not cocooned,
right.
But you're kind of with your own. You're not going to be judged or prejudged.
Right.
You're able to come to a place that's peaceful, that you're accepted for who and what you are.
Right.
Which is what all of us are, sinners. And, nobody's going to prejudge you, and you're left to your own particular devices, if you like, in terms of, if you want to go to confessions, fine. Great. Mm. If you want to attend Mass, fine. If you just want to come and explore the grounds and do your own kind of thing, that's
right.
No problem.
Mm-hmm.
And so it maintained that element of that. So it was
before your time, but in my time, there was a sense that a lot of people, not just for Knock alone, but there were a great number of people who were bordering on fanatics, who were known, in a relatively derogatory fashion as craw thumpers, meaning, that it was very I think they're a bit ahead of their time, actually, because the charismatic movement came along and nobody cared, that much,
mm-hmm.
that we had now great expression of music and song and everything, but that there was, there were some people who, for lack of a better category, one might say, had this display of deep religion, which, in spite of themselves, would come across as being, something that the rest of us wouldn't measure up to.
Yeah, well, I suppose Knock has its appeal to an awful lot of people, but mostly very ordinary people, families in particular that want to come, and we've we're exploring those kind of areas now. Our youth ministry at the Shrine has expanded a program for families that are family friendly and family orientated specifically.
Right.
So, for example, you come to the Shrine with your family, your children, you want to bring them around maybe to the Station of the Cross, that kind of thing.
Right.
But the kids aren't into that,
mm-hmm.
because they don't know as much about that as they once did. So there's a problem there. So what we saw was, well, let's have a look at that. Let's provide somewhere where parents can leave their children.
Yeah.
To engage in a fun way with their faith. And that's
mm-hmm.
what we're doing.
Right.
And so the parents leave them there. They do their thing. They come back, collect the children, go to Mass at, say, 3 o'clock, and engage with that. So there's a lot of different ways. A lot of different people come for one particular reason or another. People with extreme views on all sides.
Right.
But you have to be, you learn an awful lot of patience. With the patience, you learn an awful lot of to deal patiently with people,
right?
Because you have to, because you don't know where they're coming from in particular.
But yeah.
That's the nature of all shrines,
right? And now for Knock, which for the benefit of those, and of course we can say it here without taking offence, because both of us are from Mayo, God help us. But this, the placement of Knock, it is definitely in the middle of no place. It has, geographically from that period, but it has its own character.
Mm-hmm.
The airport, the area itself, the Celtic Tiger for all of its ills and all the rest of it, the infrastructure. It's a lot easier to get to.
Mm-hmm.
It is a main thing. But it's somehow, for many of us, we associate Knock with a day trip. Mm-hmm. We don't think in terms of Knock as being in the same realm as, you know, from a family get together to coach tours, but we still think of Knock is a great place. We don't think of Knock as a place you might want to hang out for a few days.
Yes, you're perfectly right. Now that brings us on to where I want to see Knock going, what we're planning in Knock itself. We have, over the past year, completely restructured the place in terms of how we do things, how we're looking at things, and how we can promote Knock in a better way at home and abroad. So we've produced a three-point plan that we intend to enact starting from October of 2014. And first of all, it will deal with pilgrims coming. What can we provide for pilgrims? Mm-hmm. How can maybe we help them to stay? We have our own hotel there at Knock itself. There are a couple of hotels in the vicinity, in the surrounding Morris and Kachemak, that can provide accommodation for people, and of course the B&Bs around the place. But what we want to do is we're planning to put programs, paid formation programs, retreat programs, all of these things in place so that people can get more of an experience of what it is to encounter with the Lord in Knock itself. And secondly, it'll also, we're actively promoting Knock at home and abroad, because Knock is in one way, in one word, it's undersold.
Yeah.
Completely. Even in Ireland, it's undersold. So we want to tackle that as well. And the third element, the third dimension of this, is the complete interior refurbishment of the great basilica that James Horan built in 1976.
Right.
It hasn't been touched, Adrian, since 1976.
Now, a basilica, and many of us, you know, barely know what a basilica is.
Sure.
But here it has, in the United States anyway, when we think of basilica, we also think of a, you know, this circular structure that is simply amazing. It's something like, and we associate that with great grandeur and architecture, and something that when it was being built wasn't, you know, done on the cheap, so to speak.
Mm-hmm.
Where does the basilica in Knock, where does that rate in terms of when that was built?
The basilica was built primarily to get people under cover, out of the rain.
Mm-hmm.
It was built for the accommodation of pilgrims coming to celebrate big pilgrimages. So the basilica was started in 1973, it was finished in 1976, and it holds under cover, as we say under cover, about 10,000 people. Seated about maybe 4,500 people, four and a half to four seven,
right?
And it hasn't changed anything since 1976. It was built by James Horan just to simply get people in out of the rain in case the weather became inclement, even during the summer, as we all know.
Mm-hmm.
That's a possibility, and for invalids in particular. So when the Pope came, when the Pope John Paul II visited Knock in 1979, he raised the church that was there, the basilica that we call now, it was only a church at the time, he raised that in honour of the shrine itself and in honour of the church that was built to basilica status. Now that's
which
a
is
gift
amazing.
Of the,
it yeah,
is, it
I
absolutely
mean, yeah.
it, it's a great recognition.
Yeah.
There are only, I think, my estimate, I researched this a little bit, about maybe 1,500 to 2,000 basilicas around the world only.
Right.
And it's called a minor basilica. There are four great basilicas in Rome. And so it's a great honour for Knock. And like I say, since then it hasn't been touched. The technology is old, the lighting is old. The heating is like a 747 engine when you hear it. It's a blow system, if you like.
Mm-hmm.
And it uses as much fuel as well. So it's very much, it's tired, it's jaded, it has served its purpose, and now it needs to be freshened. And so we have our plans already. We're nearly good to go. Please God, we'll start work in October of 2014, fingers crossed. And so we're at the moment we're trying to raise funds for that and trying to get things, you know, we have to find the money to pay for it, but please God, with the generosity of people at home and abroad, that can be done. So it's tied in with those three elements: the basilica, the programs, and putting on programs for people to stay in Knock for a couple of days or whatever the case may be, and the promotion of Knock at home and abroad. So I'm promoting it here in the States, but also on continental Europe as well. So it's a huge plan. It's very ambitious. It's going to take an awful lot of work, but it's eminently doable. Why?
Right.
Because I'm linking it in with the renewal of the church in the country. That's exactly what I want to do. And I think Knock has a huge role to play in the renewal of the church in Ireland itself.
Renewal of the church for many smacks of a, you know, as to what actually the phrase implies. It's a kind of starting from... not starting from scratch, but starting from a point to not just a
It's important. Now, renewal is not restoration.
Right.
It's not return to what it was way back when it had all this power and all of it. That's not what we're talking about. Renewal is very specific. Renewal is first and foremost an interior spiritual renewal of every Catholic and anybody that comes to Knock and anybody of faith on the island of Ireland.
Mm-hmm.
That's where it starts. If it doesn't start with ourselves, it's going nowhere.
Right.
But we have to have some mechanism, some place where people are able to maybe tap into that. And that's why I think Knock is going to play such a huge, important role in that, because people won't be prejudged. They'll come to get that sense, well, look, what does my faith mean to me? I might be a lackadaisical Catholic, but at least I know I'm not going to be judged if I go to Knock.
Right.
And I go to Knock and I can do whatever I like, but it doesn't matter what level of faith
you're
are.
You're not going to be corralled.
No, you're not. And that's the way it needs to be. Because people are coming from various dimensions. And for me, renewal, or as the church calls it, the new evangelization, these can't be just words that we bandy about. Because we can use them too flippantly and too loosely. That they become nebulous, they become empty, there's no concrete reality to them. So that's what the plan for Knock is about. It's about linking into that, it's about saying to people, all right, do you want to know what renewal is about? Look at our plan.
Right.
This is what we're going to do.
Mm-hmm.
1, 2, and 3. This is what we're going to do in relation to families. This is what we're going to provide for in relation to people coming. This is how we're going to promote the place itself.
Right. So. Okay. And my guest, friends, is Rector of Knock Shrine in County Mayo in Ireland. His father, Richard Gibbons, himself a Mayo man. You grew up, tell us a bit about your own growing up.
Yeah, I grew up in Lewisburg. County Mayo, just there on Clew Bay. Past Kilpatrick, and lived in the shadow.
A good bit past Kilpatrick, when we were before the infrastructure that now is a model for any country. If you got as far as Kilpatrick the week, you'd really have to be, you know, have a good breakfast or a good dinner to consider going
any further
and to Lewisburg and then on. But it is, of course, very much...
God, Adrian, you make it sound like Brendan the Navigator going out into the wilds of the Atlantic. But thankfully, it's not like that anymore.
No, it's not. But it's actually a part of a tremendous tourist attraction.
It is, really.
As in fact, it's no harm also to point out that a great number of tourists to Ireland and to the west of Ireland also come to Knock. It has a great, again, it has great history, it has a great aura about it. It has something that, again, is very special.
Absolutely. It's on the way to Lean Anne and out into Connemara and down into Galway.
Yeah, actually,
way.
I didn't finish that. I was going to tell you that Lewisburg, right onto Lean Anne and into Connemara, into that whole section there. Well,
tremendous. And if we get the weather, even better again.
Yeah.
But that's where I grew up. I went to school in Lewisburg. I went to college in UCG, to Galway, University College Galway.
Yeah.
I took a law degree. I was an apprentice solicitor in Dublin for a little while, and then I decided to enter the priesthood. I was sent to Rome, joined in 94. I returned in 2000. I was assigned to a parish in Headford in County Galway.
Mm-hmm.
I did my HDIP there, and I taught in secondary school and worked in the parish. And then I was transferred to Knock in 2003, where I've been since. And I worked in Knock and linked that in with... I lecture in theology as well in the Newman Institute in Ballina. And
you make it all sound so simple, you know.
Well, it's not meant to sound so simple. I just wanted to give a brief... I didn't want to go on forever and ever.
No, obviously.
That's my brief journey.
It is, and indeed that is some, that's a great story in itself.
Mm, and it's you're interesting, yes.
And you're living it. Now, how is, say, Knock, where does that rate in terms of recognition, say, from Rome?
Yeah, good question.
And definitely, with our new Pope Frankie, boy, I tell you, he's shaking things up for us. And but we do have all of us who may have been able to look at Rome and look at various popes. We see as a layperson, you can do this. You know, we would say, you know, that there's something about this pope.
Mm.
There's something about this Pope Francis. That is, he is coming and he has arrived at exactly the right time. We don't know what to expect. We don't know what changes there are. But Rome itself has got to have somewhere on their list, I won't say of priorities, but of recognition of pilgrimage places throughout the world. Is there a grading there?
Absolutely, yes, there is, in fact. And it comes from the investigations that would have been done, say, at any of the operational sites, like Lourdes and Fatima, etc. And that would depend on our two commissions, the 1879 Commission and the 1936 Commission. Plus the fact, after that, Knock has been honoured by popes from Pius the 12th
right through.
And that is seen in terms of, say, for example, ultimately in terms of the visit of Pope John Paul II, because that would not happen if there was any if or but about Knock itself.
But getting past, we know about the significance of that, but for instance, does Rome have a specific category either in terms of support, financial support, or a recognition that there aren't, it's not like there's a couple in every country. There are some who the cream that comes to the top, again, you could say Fatima, Lourdes, Medjugorje, Knock, and there are very few after that that just rattle off. It's a small group.
There is, for example, an Association of Marian Shrines of Europe.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the ones that are, if you like, get most attention are the apparitional shrines, as opposed to, say, for example, a shrine that has, say, let's take Częstochowa, the Black Madonna of Częstochowa. That wasn't an apparition. That just that has the image of the Black Madonna, the actual statue, or another shrine that has a painting or a picture or whatever the case may be. So apparitional shrines will be treated a little bit more because of the supernatural occurrence that would have happened. It was more dramatic, of course.
Yes.
And so those elements would kind of certainly play their part. I was in Rome recently, just a number of weeks ago, for 2 days, Marian Days, associated with the Year of Faith, where a number of us from the various shrines around Europe were introduced to Pope Francis. So there were about 20 of us or so. And it was a wonderful opportunity to meet the Pope himself.
Met the Pope.
Yeah, I met Pope Francis, and it was wonderful.
And now you're sitting down with me, I tell you.
Look at the company that you're in. Look,
I am telling you, we're not dealing with Puck here.
And I told him about Knock, and he knew roughly about it. He wouldn't have known the details or anything like that, but I was there with the rector of Fatima and La Salette and Pompeii and all of these places. And it just kind of goes to show the fact that, you know, apparition shrines are unique and special.
Yeah.
They definitely are. because there's so much more sort of expected of them, if you like. So in terms of recognition itself, the operational sites have a little bit more going for them, if you'd like to put it like that.
Yeah.
Now, Rome then would recognize in terms of visits, in terms of maybe a papal honor, such as, for example, the giving of a gift, personal gift of a pope to any shrine, doesn't have to be an apparitional shrine, is what's called the golden rose. It's a very ancient thing. It goes back to the 12th, 13th century, where it signified a personal gift from the pope, the Holy Father himself, to the shrine or to the wherever the church or whatever the case may be. So we have that in Knock, and
I'm dying to ask you, of course, when we think of a gift, is this a monetary gift? Is this a...
Oh, sorry, yes, yeah, just getting back to what you were saying. No, we get no money from Rome.
Oh.
No, and it's good to make that point. No, we have to raise money ourselves.
Could we bring
that up? The
Vatican
don't give you money.
could we start a petition for that, one would imagine. But anyway, look, that's I'm getting out of my depth here. Okay, but a personal gift would be in the sense of a recognition of some... thing that a pope would pick especially.
Yes, not,
it wouldn't be a grab bag, no, mind you.
It would be a golden rose, yeah.
Golden rose.
It actually goes back to the fact that the rose itself, the old roses, going back to medieval times, would be one central massive rose,
yes,
and 12 offshoots representing Christ and the 12 apostles. Now, they've become a little bit more, let's say, economical in terms of the number of roses that's on the stem.
Yeah.
So in Knock, it would be about 3 or 4. But that's where the tradition goes back to. It just signifies...
And are there some roses in Knock from previous...
No, just that one that was presented by Pope John Paul.
By Pope John Paul.
Yeah, just that one. And people can see it when they visit the shrine.
Excellent.
Yeah.
I must have missed that. I want to ask you two remaining questions that I'd like to ask you. First of all, Knock and the shrine at Knock and Knock all did have something that some people felt kind of talk tongue in cheek about, the marriage bureau at Knock, and yet it was. It was and had a great reputation. A lot of people who otherwise, you know, pre-internet, pre-anything else like that, it was a reliable screening for people who would like to meet somebody, and it had a great success. Was that wiped out by the internet, and now all of the, you know, the Lonely Hearts Clubs and the gigacting that goes on in the internet with respect to, you know, all of these services for matchmakers and whatever. Has Knock out of the introductory business, so to speak?
No, it's still, to answer your question very simply, it's still there. It was known as the Knock Marriage Bureau going way back when, founded in the 1960s. And but it was taken over recently, the last 2 years or so, under new management, if you like. Former parish priest of Ballyhonus, Father Joe Cooney, took it over and just reorganized it.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's gone more media savvy, more techie savvy, if you like, internet savvy. And it's now known as Knock Marriage Introductions. So it's still there.
The an issue that has never has been easy to approach at all is the horrific reality of suicides, and in fact, unfortunately, Ireland. Has definitely been affected, and it appears like there could be many many reasons for it. Some would say it has to do with the economy, the downturn, the unemployment, all of the ills that is there. But the reality of the matter is that suicide is a huge problem. It's a massive problem in the United States, which, for a very liberal country like we're supposed to be, is still taboo as a subject for most people. Where does somebody? We discussed this briefly before, but I want to bring it again. For when alcoholism is easy to recognize. Drug addiction. You can see again, gambling, many of the other ills, there is some kind of sign, there is some kind of recognition and manifestation. And there's the whole area of mental health and mental illness, all of which has been addressed. Somehow, very little has been done in the area of suicide. Suicide is very final. It is very destructive, obviously, to families and to friends and so forth. And yet we all look and see, well, how could we have known? How could we have? And in my day, in growing up in the west of Ireland and in parish of Etimass, not far from Knock, it was taboo. It was a subject, and the church's position was that whatever about anything else in life, there was forgiveness. But the notion, much less the act of suicide, was so outrageous and so offensive, to God and to our very being, that if you even went down that road, then you could expect to burn in the fires of hell forever and a day, and that was it. And there was no sense of either sympathy for or no help or no direction as to what you could do if you found that. Mm. Has that changed in 50 years? And
That would not be the way that we would look on it. You'd look on the whole issue of suicide as certainly an illness in terms of the person's life. There's no way the church would be saying, even at a funeral of a suicide, that this person is condemned to hell. That is so far removed from the way that we understand God's mercy in terms of... Because you don't know what situation that poor person's mind has gone. There is no way. And you're quite right, Adrian. All other addictions, all other aspects in terms of an individual's addiction or to alcohol or gambling, or whatever the case, they're manifested and you can always discern them. However, to varying degrees. But in terms of suicide or somebody willing to take their own life, you come at it from the point of utter sheer despair about where they are. Now, what are we doing about it? In Knock itself, I can only answer from what we do in Knock. We have a marvelous counselling service that has been there for many, many years. Mm-hmm. Many years. And it deals directly with professional people employed by the Shrine to deal with people and to help people that are in any difficulty whatsoever. So it's not that there isn't somewhere for these people to go, but like you kind of hit the nail on the head there, it still has a stigma.
Right.
And mental illness still has a stigma in relation to people. And they feel that there is something missing within them if they have to go and see a psychologist or a psychiatrist or that kind of thing. However, I do seriously think, there's more talk about this on media circles and all the rest of it, and it's getting people to talk about their depression. In fact, there was a campaign the last couple of years at home on RT saying that, you know, stigma, you should not, people that are suffering from mental illness or from depression or whatever, should not feel that a stigma anymore. And that kind of is breaking down the barriers to a certain extent.
Right.
And people are finding it a little bit more acceptable to be able to go, because it is at an extremely high rate. It's ridiculously high. Yeah. And I've no doubt here in America as well, and with young Irishmen in particular, that perhaps are coming out to America with these problems. And, you know, it's very, very difficult. There's no doubt the downturn of the Celtic Tiger, we've seen politicians taking their lives.
Right.
You know, which is an extraordinary thing, you know, because of financial situations,
right,
all this kind of thing. However, the best thing that we possibly can do is to put services in place and to put facilities and places where people can go, and again, they're not prejudged, they're simply helped. And our counselling service in Knock is there, it's open, it's free of charge. Like, if you have a problem, you just simply go in. You're asked for a donation if you can, but that's not a preclusion to dealing with the problem.
Yeah.
The point of the service is to deal with the problem and to help people to deal with that problem. Is there an answer to suicide? I don't think so. Because it manifests itself in so many different ways. The only thing that you can do is to educate people to the extent that mental illness is not a stigma. It should not be stigmatized.
Right.
There should be no repercussions for it, and you should have a safe place to go and to talk and to speak. And that's the message that we should get out there. The church's position in terms of dealing with people, I know, in the past, it was fairly draconian, and I suppose an element
of that. And it was draconian. That was not peculiar to Ireland, by the way.
No, it wasn't. No, absolutely not. Yes,
very much draconian here too.
Yes. And I suppose in a way that was to kind of help people, or maybe in a bizarre, roundabout way, it was frightening people, you know, that you just wouldn't think of this.
Right.
So you had to deal with it in some way, shape, or form.
Right.
However, that might send them down many other different roads.
Yeah.
But
but if we're so smart at everything else, and we have made a tremendous amount of headway in so many areas, little steps at a time or major steps, that at least we recognize that there are a great number of afflictions that can be helped, that can be arrested before it's too late. Mm-hmm. Yet there's this helplessness with respect to suicide that we're still uncomfortable even thinking about, much less talking about. Mm-hmm. But obviously the time has come now. You know.
And even with ourselves, last year, in fact, we had a course for our priests and staff in the shrine itself to deal with the outward signs or possible outward signs as far as anybody could ascertain from professionals, to help our priests and staff to recognize elements and not to be afraid to engage with people if they find that there is if there's something going on. And that's the education that I'm talking about. That's a reality on the ground. And that
will it be dealt with, for instance, in schools? I'm asking you that, and I'm not even sure whether it's even
addressed
here.
It is dealt with in secondary schools in terms of civics, what we call social education, that kind of thing.
Yeah.
It will be. Oh, yeah, it will be touched on. Even in RE classes, religious education classes, that kind of thing. It would, of course, because, you know, with young people and especially teenagers even taking their lives as a result of cyberbullying, which we have, it's so prominent at home, social media bullying, you know, driving young girls in particular to utter despair.
Right.
And, you know, they feel so inadequate. And then, you know, they take their life, and then there may be a copycat. We had a number of those, actually, over the last couple of years. And it's an issue that we can, we could keep going on about, but and it's hugely important, and maybe it would be interesting to hear advice from medical personnel or maybe a psychologist or psychiatrist in relation to that. But in Knock, we're doing the best that we can with it. We have the facility there, and so we're able to deal with it as best we can, and so that people know that there is somewhere to go to.
Now, let's come back to what is new. You know, when you were with us before, you were talking about a sketchy plan.
Mm-hmm.
Something that was in the offing, and I thought, frankly, the thought that what you were talking about may take a couple of years to develop. Mm-hmm. But for those who have an interest in NOC, for those who have any interest in the history of NOC, for those who may not even know that much about it, I would say that, A, you now have a plan, you know where you're going, and it seems to me like you're going to go ahead with it without, you know, the enormous amount of commitment that this just roughly describes here for us, but then that's no more ambitious than indeed your predecessor, Monsignor Horden, building an airport in the middle of a bog down in the west of Ireland or whatever. But this one is something that I think a lot of people might like to have some part in, but that's not my job. What I would think, though, is that look up NOC. Look at the story of NOC. Look at some of the tremendous stories that we don't have time to get into and so forth. And then take a look at where you envision NOC in a relatively short period of time.
Our plan would be 1 to 3 years, starting next October. And no more than James Horne, as he said at the time when he was building the airport, he hadn't got a penny. Well, that's true too. So we certainly would be most grateful to the generosity of anybody that could help us along the way. But people will be able to access information about NOC, what the plans are in our website, and they will be progressing in the springtime, and that'll be launched in the springtime.
Good.
So they'll be able to see exactly what's going on. It's a detailed plan. It's a real plan,
because
I like dealing with reality and with taking something that is wonderful like NOC and making it better,
right,
as far as we possibly can.
And for people who only maybe heard of NOC very indirectly, or the story of NOC is a good one. It is one that has withstood the test of time. It has withstood every investigation, some of them, indeed, some of the toughest investigations were done from Rome down. So, you know, it looked like the story of and the history of NOC, it seemed like there were as many people trying to bore holes in it as there were those who indeed were great believers. There is something about NOC that you will not find anywhere else. And your plan is a good one. But I think the first thing we need to do is to get people just to log on to your website and find out what this whole thing is about.
Absolutely. And the details will be up, like I say, in early spring after the new year.
Okay.
We have just brought the conclusion of the plan together. And we go forward. It's about a 1 to 3 year plan. The Basilica, please God, will be hopefully rededicated in 2016, which is a highly symbolic year and in a whole host of different ways. And that we hope over that period of time that we'll be able to get in the funds that will make this a reality. And certainly to promote the shrine, to make it better known, and to help people really encounter, and this is what it always comes back to, to help people to encounter the Lord in a unique, a special, and a memorable way that will enhance their faith and enhance their lives.
Very well said. I'm sorry we didn't leave that one to be your last line, but I do want to point out that our Cardinal Dolan here, the Cardinal Archbishop of New York, he visited NOC. I'm sure he visited NOC several times, but anyway, on a visit as cardinal, visited NOC, and did something that was rather unusual. We all know that there are feast days and saints days for every day of the year, but there is one in particular that has great ring to New Yorkers and indeed to Americans, and that is the Feast of St. Patrick for March 17th. And Cardinal Dolan invited you to come over and to concelebrate the Mass in St. Patrick's Cathedral.
That's right, to preach at the Mass, yeah.
To preach at the Mass.
Which is a massive, massive honour. It was an incredible honour.
Yeah. He was, you know, I would say that having, you know, a one-on-one with Pope Francis might have been slightly ahead of that. But before that, you had a feather in your cap in a sense that's coming from Knock.
Oh, yeah.
And here is somebody who has a lot of influence.
That's right. His Eminence was over, and he simply invited me. We were speaking about Knock and speaking about the development. And he really loves Knock. Anytime he comes to Ireland, he comes to Knock. He's great devotion to Our Lady of Knock. And he said, look, why don't you preach on St. Patrick's Day? And as I say to people, my jaw metaphorically hit the ground.
Uh-huh.
And I accepted. And it was a fantastic occasion. It was a bit nerve-wracking too, because it was on a different scale altogether. But I really appreciated the gesture. I appreciated his confidence in me to preach, and also I appreciated the fact of simply meeting people as well. So many people from the West. So many, yourself, Adrian.
Yeah.
People like you and like others here in New York. It was a wonderful occasion,
mm-hmm.
And I'm forever grateful to him for that, and also to the many people that I met as well.
Now, in the meantime, I know you're going to roll out your new website in the spring. Today, for those who are listening to us and say, I'm not waiting, mm-hmm. or I'll forget between now and spring, is there a website that can...
Oh, yes, you can get into our website now. Like, we have our Knock Shrine website. It's very simple, www.knockshrine.ie.
Or even if you
just enter Google, put in Knock Shrine, you'll get it up in 2 seconds. So you can link in with what's going on. And we'll have that updated all of the time.
Good.
So that won't be a problem.
It's an introduction, friends, and even if you've been to Knock, again, I think just since we Google everything else anyway, this is a good one. And learn a little bit about Knock. And indeed, I am delighted again to welcome back the rector of Knock and the parish priest of Knock Shrine, Knock Shrine and Knock Parish, Father Richard Gibbons. You're welcome anytime.
Thank you so much. I feel welcome. Thanks very much, Adrian.
Friends, you're listening to Irish Radio Network, USA.